Hello, hello. Thanks for listening to Guidance Counselor 2.0. Listen, I want to give you a quick rundown of what this podcast is and what you're about to get into as you listen to these episodes. We had guidance counselors in middle school. We had guidance counselors in high school, but we didn't really have guidance counselors in college. And now as professionals, we don't really have anybody to turn to ask a quick question, to learn something about the job search or to navigate your career. And so that is what I want this podcast to be for you. I want it to be a tool for you to navigate the job search and your career. So that being said, I hope you enjoy this episode. And if you need to reach me, Taylor@vaco.com is how to get in touch with me. Old fashioned email, social media at TDESSEYN. And finally, please rate and review this in the App Store because I want this to be discoverable for others so they can navigate their careers. Hope you enjoy the episode.
Brian, enough of me running my mouth. Give the people what they want. Who are you? What do you do? And we'll go from there.
Awesome. Yeah, my name is Brian Daugherty. I'm the Chief Operations Officer and Chief Technical Officer of Jumpstart Health Investors, which is a private investment firm based out of Nashville that focuses on early stage healthcare investment, specifically at scale, right? So we have over 130 assets in our portfolio, which would be portfolio companies, working in all areas of healthcare, everything from remote medical devices to nutritional supplements, to consumer products, software tech. I mean, you name it, we got it. So there I help run all the fund operations, all the corporate operations, and also keep us on the front bleeding edge of using tech to really scale our processes and support a portfolio of that size and magnitude.
I love it. So we're going to dive in today. So I was chatting with Brian off air. So I've known Brian for a long time. And one thing I love about the show is I get to meet amazing people. But what's hilarious about it is I meet people about 15 minutes before we go live. And so I was like, Brian, I know of you. Give me a rundown. And Brian brought up a really cool thing about his story, about how he's gone from the startup world to more of an enterprise world or corporate world. And so, Brian, I want to kind of dive into that. Sure. As leaders within IT organizations, talk about your story and some of the biggest differences that leaders should consider when jumping from maybe a startup environment to a corporate enterprise environment.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I've done a few startups of varying success, really cut my teeth with a small startup in mobile security in the early 2010s. And built it from the ground up in terms of building out an engineering team, a product team, a QA team, all of it, right? Then did a little bit of software services work with a second minor startup, and then decided to make the shift over to corporate, right? Specifically in correctional healthcare with a great company called WellPath, formerly called Correct Care Solutions. That jump was a little jarring, right? Like when you're an engineer and a leader in a much smaller firm, there's a lot that comes with it. It's really easy to always kind of get alignment with fewer people. And then also just, really know what's going on and where you have an impact, right? So when you move into a corporate environment, right? For reference, my largest company to date that I'd worked with prior to WellPath was about, I think at our height, we were about 15 individuals. And WellPath is over 14,000, right? So bit of a jump, right? So when you move into a much larger organization that has been around longer, has really found a way to operate effectively in a specific vertical, you don't have that ease of getting clear requirements or really even clear alignments, not just with your superiors, but across the organization, right? You have to be much more intentional about that, right? And then also you're walking into, situations that, have been successful largely, right? But there's been more time for things like technical debt to potentially accrue, right? For personalities potentially to languish that then for a while, for people to lose motivation, right? And that's just kind of something that unless you're very, very intentional about, as a corporation scales up, any corporation can fall victim to, right? So moving into any corporate operation from a small operation, it really comes back down to How do I get alignment? How do I understand the why? And then how do I motivate my team with that alignment and the why? Right. And that's, it's a different ballgame on the corporate side.
And you kind of answered my question, my next question, but I definitely want you to expound on it. You know, this just popped in my head. How do you create buy-in? So I'm a huge college football fan, right? Huge college football fan. I went to the University of South Carolina. Like, we had a decent season. We crushed UNC at the end of the year, which I was very happy about. But the one thing that was fascinating is, like, you had our coach, Shane Beamer, come in, and it wasn't his players. Right? At the end of the day, it was Bill Will Muschamp's players, right? And all that being said, it's like, how do you as an IT leader come into an organization and create buy-in with not your people?
Right. So I'm glad to hear you're a college football fan. I played D3 ball, and I guarantee you at some point there will be at least one or two football analogies during this.
I love it. I talk football all day on the show.
Fantastic. So a couple of tips for going into that, right? You know, one of the best I've ever gotten when entering a new organization is do not make any big moves in the first 90 days, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that served me very well, particularly in this position, right? There were positions, you know, individuals, et cetera, that was like 45 days in. I was like, this doesn't make sense. Why are they here? They're ineffective. Do we need to replace these folks? You know, yada, yada, yada. But then by day 90, it's like, okay, I can really see what motivates each individual, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I can see where this person can be impactful, right? Yeah, they might be a shitty tight end, but good Lord, they could kill an offensive guard, right? So, you know, it's figuring that kind of stuff out, right? So that's the first step, right? The next thing is really getting a clear assessment of, like, what the state of the team is from a cultural perspective, right? Like, you know, do they work well together? Do they understand why they're doing what they're doing, right? Is there any values, good or bad, that the team really clings to currently, right? So basically just get an assessment of, you know, again, I'm an engineer, so it comes back to define the problem. Get your problem definition.
Right.
Here are the things that are benefits that we can work with. Here are things that, you know, we're going to have to try to correct. And then after that, it really comes down to, you know, you've got to make your team, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and your team can be the same people, but, you know, it's got to be a culture that you own, you lead, and you can really buy into, right? So with WellPath, you know, after seeing the team struggle for, you know, with things that many software teams struggle with, right? You know, having some issues with, you know, releases and rollbacks and things like that, not necessarily hitting the commitments, their velocity being below, right?
Right.
Like, in working through that, it's like, all right, you know, we now understand the problem. Now let's work with the team to get an understanding of what they want the culture to be, right? Like, you can't just go and dictate it down. You can't be Moses coming down off the mountain, right? Like, you gotta talk to them and say, what should our values be? What things are important to you, right? What do you want the mission, not just for the company or the IT department to be, but our team, right? Like, you have your team specific mission, vision, and values, and get buy-in from that and work with them to really let them guide it, right? You can't like fake it and try to manipulate and say, well, I got to figure it out already. Let's try to get them to this spot. It really has to come from them to really get that long-term buy-in. But once you've done that, there was a presentation I gave the team that lives in infamy, called The Reset, right? Okay. Where it was basically like a PowerPoint where it's like, you guys are struggling with all this. Here's why, right? Like, you know, you can complain about what's been done in the past, how we got there, you know, all the things that are dragging us down for the next 10 minutes. But after that, that's the past. It's a new day, new beginning. This is our new vision, our new values, our new mission. This is the stuff that we're coming together as a team to focus on and really work on. And this is what we're going to be. And then this comes back a little bit to a football part of Dazed and Confused, right? In this case, I had every member of the team sign a letter of commitment that they were going to actually follow this mission, vision, and values. And they're going to do that. And
I love that.
Made it very clear that if you're not down for this and for any reason you don't want to, there's no shame in that, right? We can get you to go be successful somewhere else, right? I'll do everything I can to help you be successful somewhere else. That's part of being a leader, right? But if you're going to stay here, these are the rules we're going to play by, and I'm not going to be the only one enforcing them. We're all going to enforce those on each other. I want my team calling me out if I come in and start violating our values, right? If you do that the right way, you know it works when it starts becoming self-regulating. Right. Like when you see the team calling each other out and saying, like, dude, look, I know it's tough right now, but positivity is one of our values and you're getting negative. Don't do that. That's not the way we do that. Right. Like You know, if somebody says, oh man, this user is an idiot, why can't they do this stupid thing? This user interface is so obvious. It's like, man, empathy, right? You got to be empathetic with your user. That's not the way we look at these things. We need to figure out, put ourselves in their shoes and figure out why this isn't effective for them. So like, when you see it start self-regulating, that's when you really know you got a culture that's really kicking on all nines. And then everything else, all of your lagging indicators, all your KPIs, it's amazing. Your commitments start going through the roof. You know, meeting your commitment starts going through the roof. The curiosity of your developers, right, which is the thing that so many organizations overlook from a product perspective, right? That starts peaking up. You start coming up with cooler ways to do things, better features. It just all grows from that culture of building each other up. So, So that's a place we were successful there at that organization. Love that team.
I have another follow-up question, but I want to give a few more people tuned in. Chris, what's going on? Emil, John, it's great to see you. Christina, empathy is my fave. Yep. Absolutely. Same here. So Brian, you mentioned something that I want to go back to about taking maybe a poor tight end and making them an offensive guard or whatever you said.
Yeah.
I don't think leaders and organizations do enough moving around of personnel.
Absolutely.
and I think that's huge, right? Because literally, again, football, you know, South Carolina's, I bet y'all tuned in this morning and didn't realize how we're going to tie in football with like hiring and leadership, but here we are. But you know, we have this all-star player. We've been trying to play him on tight end at South Carolina. And then for the bowl game, we like moved in the wide receiver and he had like 3 touchdowns and like 300 yards. Right. And it's like, I just feel like a lot of people within organizations, like we hire somebody and it's like, if they don't work in that one role, we either let them go or we don't allow them to go somewhere else in the organization.
Right.
And to me, that's just asinine.
Yeah, it is. So I think there's a couple of things there, right? And this comes back to, you know, as leadership and as management, it's so important to have clarity of what you're trying to do, right? Like, what are your goals? What are your objectives? How do you know if you're getting there? What are your key results? Everything around that, right? Right. Because like, if you don't know how you're attacking, you know, a quarter, a release, you know, a specific problem the business is experiencing or an opportunity, good luck, right? You don't know. It's like, okay, great. Like, any college football coach that goes in game plans knows who the star players are and where the potential weaknesses are, right? Correct. And then they look at it and say, cool, I've got this set of resources. Each individual has different strengths, different abilities. How do I align those most effectively to mitigate the risk against their strengths and maximize the impact against their weaknesses, right? And,
I love that.
And in a good team, if the leader knows their team and understands that and also understands what the organization is trying to do, it becomes one big optimization problem. Right. So it's very possible. Right. Like, I mean, I've seen guys that are have struggled horribly at dev management. Right. But are just the most amazing lead from within software architects you would ever dream of. Right. You know, I've seen individuals that, you know, are, you know, have really struggled at project management. Right. Mm-hmm. But you put them in a scrum master role. Right. Lifts everybody up, right? And a lot of times it's not even like these huge moves. I'm not saying you're going to take like, you know, a QA person and then make them, you know, your senior architect.
Sure.
Right? Like, I mean, any more than you could take me and make me a, you know, a 4-2 wide receiver, right? We're just built differently, you know? But it is very possible. But it just comes down to an understanding of your team, know what makes them tick, where they can be successful, where they can have the most impact, understand the goals. There is one piece to be careful of here, and this is one of my big screw-ups in my career, right, of which I've had many, right? You want to be very careful about reducing the scope of responsibility of a very strong player, even if the intent is to give that player focus, right? Now, that can be very important, but and it can be very effective, but you have to be very aware when you're doing it, right? Because it's a different thing, right? Especially if this is a company where it's scaled considerably. You can take somebody that's been fairly effective at a larger role and put them in a more focused role.
Right.
And if you're not very careful with that handoff, it isn't seen as like, okay, now I can be the best quarterback ever because I'm only going one way, right? You know, it's like, well, but I care about the defense too, and I don't have an impact on that. And that could be like, you know, demoralizing.
Right.
So that's one place you got to be a little careful of it is when you're reducing scope of responsibility.
So you're saying don't do that. Why would a manager reduce the scope responsibility for maybe an A player?
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to, we'll keep going with the football analogies, right? Sure. Like, I mean, if you're going both ways, right, that means you only got half the time to practice on each side of it, right? Yeah. Also opens yourself up to injury on each side of it, to burnout, right? Yeah. Like, you know, the most effective person can only be so effective at any level of breadth. Right. Sure. Like, I mean, when you're in high school and, you know, the challenges are less, a lot of players play every game, every down of the game. Right.
Right.
You get to college, the really strong players might play both ways. But even then, most players are focused on just offense or defense. Right.
Right.
And then when you get to the NFL, right, even your badass players, right, they're going to be completely focused on a very narrow on a very narrow position. Right. Mm-hmm. Like. It's very odd and rare, and it does happen, right? Where like you see like a quarterback go up for a pass. If they do, it's a trick play, right? It's not because they're really going jumping back from wide receiver in there. I mean, some do that, but it's pretty rare,
right?
But like, it's the same thing. As your organization scales up, your problems and your opportunities both are going to scale as well, right? And the complexity, you know, is going to scale, right?
Sure.
You do everything you can to simplify it; it will scale as well, right? So you got to put your, you got to make sure that your team continues to adapt with the growth of the organization. And at points, that means, look, you could handle all of this before, but now we're big enough and you just need to handle this. And eventually, probably the person will just need to handle this. And it keeps getting more specialized and more focused.
Yeah. And a few more people, Chris, good morning, Yolanda, David, it's great to see you all this morning. Thanks for hanging out with us. So, I want to pivot a little bit. We're already halfway through. I knew this would happen. I tell you what, 30 minutes is not enough time, but also ain't no one got time and neither do I for like a 3-hour, experience, like some other podcasters out there. So, I want to dive into, leadership, and leadership track. So you said one thing, and I don't know if you remember verbatim. Can you do verbatim what you said off air about the growth track and your thoughts on growth in companies?
I mean, so take the current process for building technical leadership is completely ass backwards, right?
Like, there it is. I mean, that's what I wanted.
You take individuals that are extremely intelligent, extremely specialized, right? I mean, you know, I saw a post today about somebody asking, like, you know, should I get in deep and learning, you know, CSS, right? Like anybody that's a CSS master knows that it's a dark art, right?
Right.
The ability to really, like, you know, troubleshoot CSS problems and then take that to how do I build a team, a culture, and manage them? How do I deal with, like, you know, cross-functional organizations? How do I deal with, you know, manage up to leadership, right? Like, that's hard stuff, right? Like, it takes time, it takes energy, and it takes training, right? Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, many engineers, right, haven't necessarily had that the natural places you get that training growing up, right? I'm not saying all engineers are geeks, right? They're not. There's a lot of badass engineers, right, that aren't geeks. But I'd say per capita, most of them haven't been in, you know, played, you know, really deep into high school football or other sports or, like, you know, been in really large fraternities or whatever. Like, I'm not saying all these organizations are great, just opportunities to really work and lead a group of people.
Sure.
You take the people that are the most technically competent, right? Generally because they want to grow in their career. They see that management's a track where, you know, it can get more financially incentive, right? It's just natural to go up, right? Like, I mean, you don't go so high when you're focusing on, you know, deep details and subject matter expertise.
Right.
So organizations see that. They're like, great, we want to retain this person. We want them to have more of an impact. Let's make them a manager. And at no point during their technical career has anybody been focusing on that growth track, right? Have they been talking about any of the stuff that we've been talking for those 20 minutes? And then they put them in there, they struggle, right? And then the team starts to struggle, which generates more technical work. And then they use the only tool they've got in their toolbox. So they jump in and start trying to impact the technical work, which puts us in this negative feedback loop where now they have less time to focus and be a good manager. Yeah. They get more of a chip and everything falls apart, right?
Yeah.
In the organizations where I've been successful building that piece of it, you've got to be very intentional, right? Like at WellPath, we had a professional growth, you know, process that I put in place. And the first thing was like, look, man, do you want to be more of a generalist? Do you want to be a subject matter expert? Or do you want to be, you know, management leadership?
Say that. Were those your three buckets then?
Yeah.
Say that one more time.
So do you want to be more of a generalist? Okay. Right? Do you want to be a subject matter expert? So generalist, more wider technical depth, right? more technical breadth, a subject matter expert.
Very narrow. Precise
technical depth. Like, I want to be the most badass DBA there is and understand the inner workings of SQL Server where I can go consult on that someday, right? Generalist is more like, cool, I want to be a software architect. I got to understand how all these systems work, sure. How these things connect, how product comes into it, yada, yada, yada. And then the management side is like, I want to build teams, right? Like, I want to be able to motivate and take these other folks and really bring them together to produce a product and produce an output.
Right.
And the skills that you have to hone there for each one of those are very different, right?
Yeah.
And the growth trajectory on that is very different. And what work you should be doing on a, you know, on a week-to-week, month-to-month basis to grow those skills is different, right?
Yeah.
That's an opportunity that a lot of IT leadership misses, is if you understand where your team wants to go, there is always work to be done that you can align with those goals if you're intentional about it, right? If you got somebody that wants to go and do management leadership, great, right? Like, give them a small subset of the stories and say, cool, you're responsible for managing this team. You know, you assign them. You work with the scrum master and figure out how we should construct this team from the individuals we have, right? Like, you can do that, right? If you got somebody that wants to be a deep subject matter expert in something, like, great. Find a story in the backlog and say, go look at this. Go tell me about some of the pitfalls. Come back to me with a new framework and tell me why that's good or why that's bad. I mean, like, there's ways to do it where you're not creating extra work, right?
Right.
And the work you need to do is getting done, but it's still also doing double duty to grow the individual in the direction they want to go, right? But you've got to be thinking about that. It doesn't happen by accident.
And I don't know. I just love those three buckets too, man, because I like, and this is why I love interviewing different people on the show, because no one's ever said that specifically. I also want to go back to, this just popped in my head. We don't have to re-talk about it, but I want to give you a shout out, Brian, but I had a CTO from a startup in Raleigh yesterday, and it's not a coincidence that both of y'all said the same thing: values.
Right.
Right. So literally the CTO yesterday startup goes, we write our values in our job description. It kind of self-selects the people within our organization. Here you are talking about values, how it's important to get everybody on the same page. You're making people sign a letter. So props to you. Props to Chris on the show yesterday. Leaders, if you're watching this, and that guy, that has me thinking, I'm literally sitting here. So like me interviewing people is like multifold. It's like, I'm trying to learn. And then like, literally, I'm like, crap, do we have values on my team? Like, I got to figure that out. Right. So again, shout out to you, Brian, for doing it well. And then obviously Chris yesterday, cause that's incredibly important. So let's go back to the leadership track thing. And how do you set people up? Okay. So you have generalists, specialists. Have you talked about the consulting part yet? And kind of what that is?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's the subject matter expert part of it, where it's like, I just want to get really good at one thing. I want to be like amazing at SQL Server. I want to be the most badass at, you know, external integrations as possible, right? Like, you know, and you have individuals that love the technical detail and minutia so much. They're like, great, we can get you there and you can make a lot of money and be very successful growing in that path, right?
Okay.
But, you know, it's different strokes for different folks. And it's not one of any of them, right? Generally, it's like on a triangle and, you know, I'm kind of like 20% this one, 10% this one, and 70% this one, right?
Right.
And you can map all the roles in an IT organization across all of that, in my opinion, right? So you say, cool, this is the kind of role you want to go to. You want to go towards DevOps, right? Like, I mean, this is where you can be the most impactful and be the happiest, you know?
So. But again, right, you're sitting here and you're constantly evaluating talent and where they're best fit in the organization. And I mean, am I wrong? I feel like organizations just don't do that.
It was something that I added uniquely to the organizations I've been in, right? And everyone I've been in, everybody wants to have a growth track, right? You want to talk about retention and everything? Yeah, money is important. You know, obviously, you know, that's fine. But like, two things, right? Have a culture where everybody feels like they're in it for each other, right? Because you always play harder for the person next to you than for your coach, right?
So
and then two, make sure they know where their career is going and they feel like every day they're getting better and they're growing towards something. If you have those two things going on with the team, sorry, Taylor, you're not going to poach them, right? Like, I mean, they're not going to go anywhere, right? Like, that's the key. But to do that, you've got to have that level of understanding of both your organization and every individual on your team at that personal and professional level. And you have to genuinely care about them getting there, right? Yep. And sometimes that means like letting them go free, right? I mean, I've always said the most important part of being a manager is making each of your team members as successful as possible. Even if that means it's not in your organization, right? Yep. So if I can't make you better anymore and I can't grow you towards your piece, you shouldn't be coming to me bashful and saying, look, I'm starting to think about other opportunities. I should be saying, look, man, we got to figure out either get you more stuff to do here that's more fitting, move you up, or let's figure out how to get you somewhere to where you can become even more of a badass.
I love that. Right?
I mean, that's the joy of being a leader and a manager is that piece of it. And if you do that, your team will get better. You'll get more people to fill those gaps so you can grow. There's generally an economic benefit of doing that because you can bring in someone more junior. Like, I mean, it all works and you're all doing it for the right reasons. So you feel good about it at the end of the day.
Absolutely. So we've had some comments come in and then I want to wrap it up here. Christina goes, when I work with mentees on career development, I sort them into three buckets. A lot of times a generalist doesn't realize they're a generalist. Absolutely. Chris comes in and goes, I really like this approach to employee development. I've never worked with anyone, including my best managers, that thought about it this way. I've had a lot of freedom to pursue the things I want, but never had someone structure work around my skills and interests. Again, this is why I'm so thankful. I got this out of Brian this morning because I think that was just absolute gold. James comes in. James, it's great to see you. James is a fellow guest on the show. 2 weeks ago, James, 2 weeks. Do you feel that gaining trust and respect as a leader has to come from originally coming from a subject matter expert in moving up, or if there is general knowledge of many things, respect and trust can still be gaining by the subject experts you're managing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when I joined WellPath, it's a .NET shop, and I had never coded a line of .NET. Okay, right? And I will tell everybody right now, I am a terrible coder. Okay, anybody that's worked with me on a technical project, I can read it, I can debug it, I can find the problems in it very quickly. But if you want me to write something from scratch, do not have me on your code-a-thon team,
sure.
Right? I will be a liability. So it really comes down, again, to understanding, talking to each individual, understanding where they fit in, where they think they fit in,
right.
And really understanding the organization itself of what you're trying to do to where you can connect those two, right? You know, if you're always honest, right, and humble and be a servant leader and just like say, yeah, you're brilliant at this. I can't do what you do because especially on the tech side, I can't in many places.
Right.
You can still get that respect, right? And you get it by listening, but then also holding folks accountable, right? Like say, look, I'm going to have your back all the way. I will always take the praise last and take the blame first, right?
Right.
They'll follow that. And then when you show where you're lifting them up, right, and giving them what they need, like if they ask for something, make sure you understand the why, and then go get it or tell them why you can't or why you're blocked, right?
Right.
Then that's what builds trust. It's not being some technical mega mind overlord,
correct.
Right? It's really be understanding what drives everybody.
And to be honest, I would argue now, I think the world, when I say this, I'm trying to frame it appropriately. I feel like there is more of a desire now than ever for leaders to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like literally, I feel like as a leader, if you say, I don't know more often, I think you're actually probably going to garner more trust.
Or you tell me, right? Yeah, like, it's exactly. Like, how did you do this? Ask them questions and don't do it to be patronizing. Or
No.
Do it from a place of, you know, like, how would you go about this, right? And sometimes you'll take the advice and sometimes you don't. And when you don't, you say, hey, look, that was really appreciated. Here's what I'm thinking. This is the risk. And here's the why we're going to go about it this way, right?
Yeah.
Make sure everybody's on the same page with the why.
Absolutely. And Barrett chimes in. Barrett's another former guest on the show. Companies value retention and growth very little these days, which makes no sense. It costs so much more to replace somebody, but at the same time, they aren't willing to do what it takes. So people want to stay. Yeah. Again, I mean, this is why I get guys like Brian on the show to kind of shed some light on how to keep people. And I will tell you this, I was not able to pull any people away from WellPath when Brian was there. So I think that says something. So, all right, Brian, last minute or two, wrap up here. Any final words of wisdom for the guests today or for the viewers today? Anything around the job search? Do you have any tips for job seekers right now? Any more tips for hiring managers? Just your last little bit of wise words of wisdoms.
Yeah. So for the job seekers, the key thing is make sure you get goal alignment, right? Like, you know, understand and be able to explain how you're going to come in and have a big impact on this organization, right? Mm-hmm. And why the hiring manager should be excited for, right? That is the biggest key you can use in a negotiation. If you can tell them, it's like, look, I would be really excited to join if I had this much more because here's the impact I'm going to have.
Mm-hmm.
There, you'll knock it out of the park, right? And then, you know, kind of going back to the last comment for the hiring managers, none of this is particularly complex, but none of it is easy, right? Like it takes time. It takes time from your team. It takes time from you. You have to be intentional about it. It's like, the hour a month pizza party ain't going to do it, right? You got to be able to put the structure in place and go in and do it. So, and that's why a lot of the organizations don't, right? They don't have clarity of what they're trying to do. They're not able to explain it. So people end up hiding in the ambiguity, and that can be self-preserving for a little bit, but it's but the smart folks and your rock stars, they're going to see through it. And you know, you can't build everybody up in a way without the clarity and the alignment across the organization. So it takes time, it takes intent, man.
I love it. Well, Brian, thanks again for coming on, man. I appreciate it. Stay on real quick as we end. But y'all, thank you again for hanging out with us this morning. I hope y'all enjoyed it. I learned something. So if I learned something, hopefully y'all learned something. Go connect with Brian on LinkedIn. If you are in the Nashville area, reach out to Brian. I'm sure, you know, if you have ideas or things you want to communicate to Brian, definitely reach out to him and ping him. Tomorrow morning, Unicorn Finders, 9:30 a.m. Central. It's my other podcast because a man can't have too many podcasts. We basically highlight companies, doing things more unicorn-like. We have never had somebody in the wedding industry. So we have a tech startup in the wedding industry on tomorrow morning. So you won't want to miss it. 9:30 a.m. Central. Go connect with us at Unicorn Finders. We have a LinkedIn page. I was about to say a Facebook page. We do not have a Facebook page, a LinkedIn page. And then Friday, I will have a Render ATL guest on the show. Her name is Genesis. She is at Facebook or Meta or whatever they call themselves now. So go check that out. And y'all have a great one. Brian, thanks again for hanging, man. And we'll see y'all tomorrow.
Hey, you did it. You listened to an entire episode, and I am very grateful because you know why? There's a lot of podcasts out there. There's a lot of episodes, and I myself rarely finish an entire episode. So I appreciate you so, so much for listening. Quick reminder, please rate and review this podcast in the App Store. I want this to be discoverable to others. And the only way that happens is if you take the time right now and rate and review it. Please, like right now. Unless you're driving, then don't do it. So thank you again. If you need to reach out to me, taylor@vaco.com or at TDestin on all social media handles. And I hope you have a fantastic day.